And welcome, everybody, to our monthly Conscious Relationship Seminar Series. I'm David Steele. I am CEO and founder of Relationship Coaching Institute and Relationship Coaching Network, and we conduct this seminar series every month. Our goal is to bring you top experts in the field, and we have a great one for you tonight. And Cindy Briolotta is usually my cohort, and she can't make it tonight, so we'll be thinking of her. If you'd like to learn more about us, go to consciousrelationshipresources.com. We have e-programs and audio programs and downloads and newsletters and all sorts of great stuff for singles and for couples. That's what we're about. And tonight, I am excited to have the man who wants to save marriages in America one husband at a time. His name is Scott Halsman. He's a psychiatrist. So we'll call him Dr. Halsman. He's the founder and editor of drscott.com, author of The Secrets of Happily Married Men, 8 Ways to Win Your Wife's Heart Forever, just published this year. Dr. Halsman is board certified in psychiatry and is a distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. He's a graduate of Brown University, received his medical degree from the Brown Medical School. He completed his psychiatric training and chief residency at Yale University. Wow, big name, Scott.
And Charles.
And he's currently medical director of NRI Community Services in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. So you can look him up if you like. He has chaired a marriage workshop at the annual American Psychiatric Association and is a regular presenter at the annual Smart Marriages Conference. And I'm going to be there as well. So if you're going to be in Atlanta in June, say hi to Scott and myself. We'll be happy to meet with you. Scott Halsman, welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here, David, and I'm so pleased that so many people could be joining us today.
So I'm very interested in your book. I haven't read it, and so we're going to get the Cliff's Notes version tonight. But it's just intriguing to target the husbands. And my first question, what I'm wondering is, did you do a survey and research on husbands specifically, or is this from your own experience or from your clinical practice, or how did you get your material for the book?
My concern has always been when I look at material or try to figure out the strategies that men, married men who are successful in their marriages use, I was finding that I didn't have a whole lot in the way of resources in the literature. And I'm a little bit shy about going to, you know, books that say that, you know, that describe interactions with patients, that give the psychotherapy session and describe them, because it always seems to me that's the therapist's description of what happened. You know, you go through the countertransference and the transference before you know it. Who knows what the real interactions were? Mm-hmm. So what I did was that I set up a website, which at the time was called secretsofmarriedmen.com, but it's now just called drscott.com. And on the website, I asked people to tell me their strategies for how they managed to make marriage successful, or the frustrations and the challenges that they had in marriage. And I used that as a background to gather the information. So it was really trying to put it out there to as many people in the real world, dealing with real relationships as I could. So I use my clinical practice, of course, and I also used, I think there's a lot of very reputable and good research out there, so I tried to combine those and pull together a book that men would be able to understand, and in part because it's written by men.
I agree with you that men have typically been viewed as unskilled in relationships, as being backwards, and, you know, the women are the smart ones. And, you know, we tend to have a style difference, you know. There are a few gender differences there, and they come out in our relationships. So what have you noticed about, you know, what works for men, and, you know, what the secrets are? What is it that you want to teach us tonight?
Well, I think you're right on track there when you talk about the fact that there are differences. And one of the things if there's one message that I wanted people to go home with, it's the idea that there are very specific things that men can do to help improve the quality of marriage, that men are not relationship impaired, they're not relationship retarded. In fact, they can be quite relationship brilliant, and they can make a real contribution to making marriage better.
Well, as a man, I am happy to hear you say that. Because, you know, we often get criticized because we're not women and we don't feel like women or talk like women or emote like women. So
right, and implied in all that is that that's a bad thing. You know, but I like to see men as having tremendous fix-it skills in all walks of life. And, of course, women also, you know, can be extremely successful at things, but why is it that men can achieve 95% of all Nobel Prizes? I mean, they can get the Nobel Prize in chemistry, in literature, in physics, in peacemaking, and in economics, and yet they're tremendously skilled across the board, and yet people look at men and say, well, relationships? Nah, men can't do that.
Well, say more about men's particular talent for relationships. You say men are very skilled at relationship, and it is different than women. How so?
Right. Well, I think, for instance, you're right. Men don't tend to be as emotive, and they often don't tend to express how they're feeling about things. And sometimes women will look at that and say, see, you know, you're not really sensitive to me because, you know, you're not tearing up here, or you're not swooning when you see the baby. But on the other hand, what I'm doing as a man is I'm processing things analytically. I'm trying to absorb information and understand it so that I can figure out how to deal with it. Now, that you may be looking to you like I'm being emotionally bland, and maybe I am, but by putting my emotions aside, I'm actually able to engage my problem-solving skills. And I'm really going to be better at doing some things that the relationship requires of me because I'm using my problem-solving skills rather than jumping in on an emotionally-based response.
Right. You're more concerned with the task at hand, the job at hand, what needs to be done, you know, how to make, you know, your partner happy, how to take good care of your children.
Right. And but you know, that's if you know how to use those skills. See, my biggest problem with the way that the current kind of dialogue goes between men and women is that men are said that those skills aren't very useful in relationships. So let me give you an example. Now I'm talking to my wife and she starts to tell me about all of the things that were going wrong today when she was on the telephone with a friend and they were talking about a problem with someone at work. Because I've never learned how to use my relationship skills. I say, they're there. I say to my wife, oh, well, you know, why don't you just forget about that friend? She's always been a pain in the neck anyway. And, you know, just put this whole thing beside you and quit if you don't like the job. You know, which is totally the wrong thing to say. So now, instead, I would teach men that if you've got a relationship, you know, you've got a good skill, you've got good listening skills, you've got good problem-solving skills. Now what you need to do is figure out what to do with them. So I think, David, you've been in the relationship business long enough to know that if your wife starts talking about how stressful work was and the conflict she had with her partner, I bet you kind of know the right thing to do.
I don't know. Typically, most women want to be emphasized with and mirrored back a little bit.
Exactly. So now what I say to the husbands is I say, let's figure out what your task is. You used to think that your task was to try to help solve her problem, to give her a solution that's going to make it get better. But in fact, your task is to make sure your wife feels understood. That's your job. And the guy goes, that's it? That's my job? Yes. That's what you're supposed to do. All right. Thank you. Now at least you've told me what I'm supposed to do. My wife has begun to talk. Now my job is to let her feel understood. Now, maybe, you know, it may not come naturally to a man to try to understand how his wife needs to be understood. So I can teach him a little bit about, you know, listening skills. I can teach him to do things like, when your wife is talking, stand still. And you may say, well, duh. But I have to say, naturally, as a guy, I actually listen better when I'm walking around. And nothing makes me settle down more than walking through the house, turning off all the lights when my wife is talking to me. Because, of course, nobody's in any of the rooms. But that makes my wife feel like she's not being heard. So if my job is to make my wife feel heard, I now have to learn unique skills that may not be intuitive that let her know that she's being heard. then once she feels heard, and of course those skills also include things like reflecting back, occasionally saying things, I understand, that must be difficult for you, you know, and not just in a patronizing way, but truly because that's what she needs to hear to feel understood. Now you've given this guy a job to do, you've given him the tools to do that job, and lo and behold, how do you think the wife feels about the conversation? She's thrilled.
Right, so this is a skills-based approach, and it's framed as, you know, what to do. And I absolutely agree in my practice over the years, it just seemed like the men were just hungry. Just tell me what to do. What can I do to win? What can I do to make her happy? What can I do to solve this, you know, marriage so that it's working and everybody's happy? They just seemed hungry to know what to do. So that seems like the approach you're taking here.
Right, and you know, you make a very good point. You are absolutely right. I do say what to do. But it kind of goes against, you know, what many of us learned in kind of psychodynamics and, well, gee, why do you think it is you need to walk around the house? You know, what do you think you're trying to avoid? Why is it that you're not making that eye contact with your wife? And, you know, maybe at some point in therapy, you may want to get to that. But I kind of put that aside because guys don't resonate with that. You know, you start asking them, you know, explain how your early childhood relationships affect the way that you're interacting with your wife, and they'll start to pull away from therapy. They don't really see the point of talking about those relationships when they're really just trying to figure out how to make their wife happy. I'm not saying down the line it may not be very useful, but if you want to engage a man in therapy early on, it's much better to give him the tools to make his relationship better instead of, you know, asking him to do a lot of reflecting and understanding of his emotions.
Right, I absolutely agree. I have a question for you, a little different direction. We've been talking about, you know, how the man can understand and respond to the woman so that she feels heard and so that she's happy and so that he knows what to do with her. How about the man getting his own needs met in the relationship? This is about the secrets of happily married men. A happy man is one who's getting his own needs met.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of men just really frustrated. We love to be the hero. We love to be the caretaker. We love to show up and take care of our family and our partner. And we oftentimes forget about ourselves. And then we get frustrated and we don't really know how to, you know, make up for that. Any suggestions?
There are two ways of approaching this issue of getting our own needs met. One is a mental mindset, which I think is critically important. It goes something like this. You know, the studies by John Gottman that he did in the mid-90s showed that one of the great predictors of a happily married couple was when the man was able to allow himself to accept his wife's influence. And I think many of us were, you know, kind of saw that. And according to Gottman, of course, when the media caught this, the headlines that ran in the newspapers was, study shows that the answer to happy marriage is, yes, dear. And John Gottman, he was a little, you know, offended by this, but he ultimately said, yeah, there's part of that message to that. And I think many of the men that contributed to secretsofmarriedmen.com or now drscott.com were saying that in fact what they had learned to do was to focus on their wives' needs. Now, what a strange response to your question, because the question would have had, how does a man get his needs met? But here's the psychological component of that. That is that the truly happy men are the ones whose joy it is to see their wives get their needs met, you know, who truly love the fact that their wives are happy. Now, that might seem strange, but, you know, interestingly, we do this all the time with our children. You know, if you said, I tell you what, if you do X, Y, and Z, all of which are extremely burdensome, your child will be happy for his or her rest of his or her life, what parent wouldn't step up and do that? But when it comes to our spouse, we're much more skeptical about the idea of saying that my most important desire is to make her happy. And what I've learned is that when you combine the yes, dear, with the genuine desire to make your wife happy, to make her feel special, to make her feel loved. If that is what you want, so when she feels that way, you've now gotten your needs met. Now, I did say there's two sections to this, okay, because a lot of you guys are listening out there and saying, okay, that's fine, but there's a 50-inch plasma HD TV I've been looking at. You know, that's also one of my needs. And, in fact, there are other needs. And you're right, David. People, you know, men, I think it's really a shame when men get to the point where they feel that they have to put all their needs on the back burner. And I don't think that that's a wise thing to do. I think that you need to feel like you're getting your needs met, like you're connecting with what your core values are. But here's the caveat, that you're not going to get your needs met until your wife feels, first and foremost, that you have made her your top priority. And when your wife feels like she's a top priority, like you're putting her needs first, then she goes right along for the ride with you and is happy to be part of the life, of your life, part of the things that you enjoy doing. But if she feels that the things you're doing are going to threaten your connection with her, she'll shut it right down.
I do agree that it is a huge need that men have. They get a lot of self-esteem and meaning out of their partner being happy. You know, to the point where, you know, they have a hard time going beyond that. You know, that's what, in my own life, my own relationships, it seems like it's gone that way, a lot of the men I've worked with. So, let's say a guy is working very hard at making his wife happy, and listening, and empathizing, and being present for her, and he has some needs too. He'd like to play golf more often, he'd like to go backpacking, he'd like a little bit more space to do some of his things. And she gets a little clingy. She doesn't want him to be gone for days. Maybe he wants more sex, and she doesn't have as much sexual desire as he does. So those kinds of things, he can be doing everything right and making her as happy as possible, but when what he wants or needs impinges on her, she disagrees with it, she doesn't want to go that far. What are your suggestions?
You know, that's a very typical scenario. I like to joke when, you know, the subtitle of my book, The Secrets of Happily Married Men, is 8 Ways to Win Your Wife's Heart Forever. And 7 of those ways are generally geared toward understanding what your wife's needs are and applying yourself so you can meet them. But the 8th way is called Introduce Yourself. And actually, the chapter addresses exactly, you know, for someone that didn't read the book, it was a great intro to that chapter. Because Introduce Yourself is exactly what that chapter is about. It's like, okay, now what do you do? And what's going to happen is and of course, all relationships vary, and I hope that your listeners appreciate that when I talk about husbands and wives, I don't mean all husbands and all wives, and of course there are great variabilities. There are some women that don't care whether a guy, you know, demonstrates non-stop commitment and love. They're just there for the ride. But this is kind of what I've learned from the people that I've worked with, and from the people that have contributed to the site, that at a certain point, you do need to start to get your needs met. And that may not be, I think the problem is that a lot of men try to get that too early in the relationship, before their wives really know that you're in it for the long haul, that you're committed to her, that you're committed to the relationship. I really believe once women get to that point, that they do kind of take a step back. Now, suppose they don't. At this point, my feeling is, you know, you have to also, one of the things that your wife also wants from you is she also wants a husband who's got a backbone. I mean, she will respect you more if at a certain point you say, look, dear, I know you don't want me to play golf today, but I'm going to be a better husband if I go out there and spend time on the golf course. So I'll set up the, you know, I'll marinate the steak for the barbecue tonight. I'll take care of lighting the grill when I get home, but right now, I'm going to play golf. And if you're concerned about the, you know, I'll call the babysitter and bring the babysitter over if you're feeling overwhelmed. But at a certain point, you just have to say, I need to do this because it's good for our relationship. Now, again, if you want to play golf twice a day on Saturdays and Sundays, good for you. But if your wife doesn't want to do that, I don't care. I don't think that's good for the relationship. Mm-hmm. But within limits, sometimes you just have to make that decision and recognize that that being a little selfish occasionally is okay. But your wife needs to know that you're there for her over the long run.
Yeah, and I do think your partner will respect you for standing up for yourself and give you more room when you do that. And we have to let go of our, you know, pleasing, you know, puppy dog kind of behaviors and just have a backbone, you know.
Yeah, one of the things I talk about in the book is that I play tennis on Wednesday nights, and that it was kind of a schedule from the very first, you know, from the time our babies were like 1 year old. And there were nights that we would have fights about it, you know, because she just thought, how could you go play tennis when our son is sick or when I've been sick or X, Y, and Z? And for the most part, I said, this is something I have to do. And now she can look back at this 15 years later, 18 years later, and say, all right, you know, that was probably good that you did that. But at the time, you're right, I had to stand up for myself, and I knew that it was better for the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, my own story in my first marriage, when I grew a beard and, you know, sold one of my cars and got a sailboat, was the beginning of the end. And, you know, there are relationships, there are partners that, you know, won't participate in the give and take, and that when you do stand up for yourself, then the relationship's not sustainable. But then that's not really a sustainable relationship anyway.
Well, but I would argue, not that I know anything about your particular situation, but I would argue, again, at what point, because you can't, I mean, yes, little things like playing tennis occasionally, you know, and every other week is okay, but, you know, big things like that can only be done when she is convinced that you are her top priority. And until she's convinced, and what I tell guys is, guess what, it may not happen after a year. It may not happen after 2 years. It may not happen after 10 years. So there's a lot of time that men often need to invest in relationships when, just like you pointed out before, David, they feel they're not getting a whole lot of return except the return of having a happy wife. And frankly, for those 10 years, the wife is saying, nope, nope, haven't met my standards yet. And it does get frustrating for men. And a lot of men at a certain point just pull out. They say enough is enough.
Yeah. In your case, 15 years of your wife disapproving of you being gone on Wednesday evenings for tennis, did that impinge on the relationship, you know, other than Wednesday nights, or was she able to let go of that?
Oh, well, I'm sure she would view it differently than I would, of course. You know, over those 15 years, it got better and better, and it was only occasionally it would come up. Mm-hmm. In my case, she generally was, you know, able to let go of it. My wife is very good at being able to go to sleep and waking up the next morning and saying, gee, last night I was, you know, I was a wreck. You know, I wasn't in a good place, but I'm feeling better today. And I kind of knew that, but of course it's not a good philosophy to say to your wife, you're tired, you're a wreck, you'll feel better tomorrow. That doesn't work all that well.
What about sex, Scott? You know, a lot of guys want more sex, and, you know, they're wondering, you know, how to do it, and they do all the pleasing behaviors they know.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily get their wife in the mood often enough for them.
Yeah. You know, this is one of the great failings of pop psychology, is the idea that, you know, here's what you hear, okay? Well, you know, courtship begins at the beginning of the day. And, you know, that's when the seduction begins. So you really need to pay attention to your wife. You need to call her from work. You need to send her flowers. Then when you get home, help around the house.
You mean that's not true?
Well, here's what I say. It doesn't hurt. It absolutely helps.
Huh?
But what makes you think that if you do all those things, suddenly she's going to start feeling horny? I mean, it is true that all those things help. But what's missing from, so, because what typically happens is a guy says, okay, you know, I just watched Dr. So-and-so on TV, and he said I should do all that stuff. Courtship starts at the beginning of the day. Here I go. And he calls, and he checks in, and he puts on his cologne before he comes home. He's really sweet, and he says, sit down, I'll bring you some ice water, and, you know, I'll pamper your feet. You know what she says? You're doing this because you want sex tonight, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. And he says, well, yeah, actually. And she says, oh, you know what? This is so manipulative. This is terrible. You know, I can't have sex now. You know, it puts guys in a dilemma. Because what out of that equation, why that doesn't work, and why guys end up getting frustrated and end up just sometimes giving up, is because the part of that that's missing is you do have to, you know, sometimes it works, God bless them, but you also have to engage in a conversation. You've got to have a dialogue. You've got to be able to say, just like that 50-inch plasma TV or just like that boat, at a certain point in the relationship, you have to say, you know, this is an important part of our relationship, and it's important to me. But one of the things that I try to teach men in the book is you don't have to be ashamed of being sexual. I mean, women, they kind of look at you and like, well, aren't you over that by now? Being sexual is what drives us to so much of what we do. It's what our wives were attracted to, in part. It's what attracted us to our wives, that sexuality. We shouldn't have to feel like it's got to be turned off. And the other thing that I write about in my book, which you'll find in you won't find this in too much in the way of literature, is I tell men that it's okay to masturbate. You know, you're getting frustrated. And again, a lot of men that contribute to my site said this. Look, every once in a while, I've just taken it into my own hands. And that will help somewhat. It won't replace the love. It won't replace the connection you want to feel with your wife. But it can help with the biological urge. The other thing is that it's okay to look at porn. Not, porn, this is a very politically incorrect thing to say. You know, everybody says, oh, all porn is bad. Well, I'm sorry, but I was sitting there talking to a doctor. We were at a conference, and his son called him. The conference is in New York. His son calls him from New York and says, Dad, guess what? The Victoria's Secret catalog got here. You know, there's lots of porn, different places, and it doesn't mean just because you use porn that you're necessarily addicted to it. Now, again, ideally, you wouldn't need porn, you wouldn't need to masturbate. But there are certain points in a relationship in which things slow down, but sometimes that intensity for sex becomes so great that it drives the relationship apart.
And certainly, masturbating and porn is better than infidelity.
Exactly. Although, unfortunately, a lot of women view pornography as infidelity. And another thing that I talk about in the book, though, because I know that a lot of women read this book. It's called Secrets of Married Men. But at least half the emails I get are from women that have read it. And when women read it, I say, look, in case your wife is reading this, there are some things she ought to know. And I think the most compelling are the studies that take a look at women's sexual desires. That the myth that women needed to first have desire, then arousal, then orgasm, actually has not been shown to be the case. There's a researcher out in Vancouver who has demonstrated that for a lot of women, they don't feel desire at all. That actually initiating sex will start the desire. And the desire will actually begin to accrue after you start engaging in sexual play. So that women, and my patients will tell me that all the time. Well, I didn't really feel like having sex with my husband. But you know what? When it was over, it wasn't bad. And it was better than not bad. It was good. So I really want to try to teach women that, it shouldn't be this kind of sine qua non of you have to have full rank, 100% sexual desire among both of you in order for sex to take place. Good sexual interactions are as important as good conversations. And just because you don't feel like having a conversation, sometimes you have one because it makes the relationship closer. Just because you don't feel like having sex, sometimes you have sex because it makes the relationship closer.
And I imagine that it's good news for men that you can just go ahead and arouse your woman. Don't wait for her to want it, and she'll end up wanting it because you're arousing her.
Well, it is good for men, but women unfortunately need to know this, or else they may still, because I think there's, we have evolved over time to kind of have sexual contact as being a standard that it's unless everybody's on board 100%, it shouldn't happen. And I agree, but I think the lower sex drive partner has to loosen up what the definition of is not being on board with it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the lower sex drive partner is the man. And I will have men that come into my office and say, I'm not interested in having sex with my wife. And I will tell them, sex is an important part of, your relationship. You ought to be having it whether or not you're interested in sex or not. So it goes both ways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good stuff. So you mentioned that there were eight secrets, and the last one is introduce yourself. Can you give us a rundown, a quick thumbnail of the, you know, the overview of the secrets?
Sure. Well, you know, we've covered a number of them, but I didn't define specifically what they were. The first is called Make Marriage Your Job. And that's really where I kind of invite men to recognize what their skills are in the workplace. Everything from being able to figure out how to solve a problem to delaying gratification. And say you can use those same skills at home. And the second is called Know Your Wife. You know, that for people that are listening and saying, oh, well, you know, not all women are like that, not all men are like that, I don't want to make that point at all in my book. What I want to say is, before you know what your wife is like, you need to really observe her. You need to learn what she's like and how she functions and drop your assumptions. And I've got a great example from my own life, which is that we used to, every year we'd go up to New Hampshire to go skiing. Now, my view of skiing, David, or going on a vacation is, you go to vacation for several reasons. One is you go to relax. Two is you go for the scenery. You know, you go to go out to eat. And you go to get involved in some activity. You know, something like skiing or cross-country skiing or skating or even mountain climbing. That's what vacation's about. Now, do you think I'm leaving anything out there, David?
No, what about connection?
Oh, sure, exactly. It's for spending time together. Absolutely. Yes, get away from the hubbub. You're right. But you know what vacations are for my wife? Her main interest when she goes on vacation is shopping.
Oh, yuck.
Yeah. And you know how many years it took me? I kept thinking, well, why are we shopping? This has nothing to do with vacation. And for me, I always felt like this was an add-on. I didn't budget for it, you know, because it wasn't part. It's got nothing to do with going to New Hampshire. But the fact was that that was what she loved about going on vacations. And you see, it took me years to learn that. So now, I've got to budget a little bit more. Now I set aside a day for a shopping day.
And you go with her?
Of course I go with her.
You're a hero.
Well, here's the thing. I used to hate going shopping with her, but this was taught to me actually by a man that attended my seminar at one of the Smart Marriages conferences, because he taught me this, and it's great. He said, I used to hate going with my wife shopping, but I really loved being with my wife. I always felt like I didn't have enough time to spend with her. So now, instead of thinking that I'm going shopping with my wife, I just think I'm going to spend time with my wife. And just that little mental shift makes a world of difference. So when I start to feel frustrated about the 20th blouse that she's trying on, I just kind of say, you know what, I'm spending time with my wife. And it feels good to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. And using that mental shift, I can go shopping for hours. And I'll tell you another little trick that I do. I'll find something for myself and say, I think this looks nice, I think I'll buy it. I have no real interest in it. I would rather not buy it. I'd rather save the money. But when I do that, it kind of shows her that I'm engaged enough that I'm actually enjoying and active and involved in it also. And it's kind of a compliment to her.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good advice.
And that's just a store that only sells women's lingerie, that I don't pick out anything for myself.
You can always ask to make a side trip to the electronics store.
There you go.
So, Scott, we've been talking a lot about married men and women. Anything to offer for gay couples?
I think, in general, the marriage literature is paltry. To be honest, we don't know enough in terms of the research to know what strategies work and what don't work in these couples. But I think if you start with the premise, for instance, the third way of the eight ways to win your wife's heart forever is to be home now. The fourth way is on how to deal with conflict, and the fifth way is on how to listen. And I think conflict management skills and listening skills are really universal. Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't matter. A woman could read that chapter, you know, a heterosexual or homosexual couple could read those chapters and learn the same skills about it. Because the number one issue, I don't care, you know, what type of relationship it is, the number one issue for all of us is we want to be heard. We want to feel like the other person understands us. So learning good listening skills is such a tremendous boon to relationships, and I think that would apply really across the board.
And just to finish up, what is the sixth and seventh secrets?
Okay, let's see. So where were we? We're on make marriage your job, know your wife, be home now, expect conflict and learn to deal with it, learn to listen. Well, the next way is aim to please. Most of us are familiar with the John Gottman research that shows you have to have five positives for every negative interaction. We often start pulling back on our positive interactions. Once we get married, we kind of assume, okay, everything's on autopilot now. Let me just chill out, and I'll focus on building up that 401k. But the reality is that you can't stop courting your wife. When I have a guy that comes into my office, I'll tell him, you know, between this visit and the next, I want you to send your wife a card. I want you to send her flowers. Oh, well, she'll think something's up. Yeah, well, she'll think something's up. She'll think you care. So, you know, don't forget to do things. Pay attention to what pleases your wife, and then do it. And the seventh way is understand the truth about sex. And you and I spoke a little bit about some of those issues before, about the differences in the way men and women look at sex, how to actually talk about sex, rather than just assume that if you do everything right, your woman's going to get all hot and bothered.
Yeah, you know, it occurs to me that you could probably strip away the labels men and women, and, you know, gay folks could read the book and pretty much everything would apply. But I'd be interested in what feedback you might get about that.
Well, I do. I've got one, a gay woman I work with, but she actually had had a long-term relationship with a man before settling with her gay partner. And she just thought it was very interesting. She could relate to a lot of it. Some of what's in the book talk about specific brain differences between men and women. But even those, I mean, those are based on averages. When couples read this, they're going to read, for instance, that men have smaller corpus callosums. Now, the corpus callosum is the part of the brain that connects the left and right hemisphere. So it connects the emotional part of the brain with the ability to express verbally what your emotions are. So I write in the book that most men have smaller corpus callosums. Most men are less able to express what their emotions are, even though they may recognize them, you know, viscerally. But people read that book, and women will say, yeah, but that's me. In this relationship, I'm the one that can't express emotions. Mm-hmm. That's the nice thing, is that I think if you're open-minded and you take a look at the book, you'll recognize yourself in it, and you can easily see where something that I describe as being a typically male phenomenon in your relationship is more in the female.
You are listening to Secrets of Happily Married Men, 8 Ways to Win Your Wife's Heart Forever, with Dr. Scott Holtzman, who wants to save marriages in America one husband at a time. And we'll open up the line in just a minute. So what would you like to say in closing before we open it up to our audience?
Well, the main message I'd like to get across to people is that for too long, men have been labeled as being relationship incompetent, that they just don't have a clue. And I think that's destructive. It's destructive when we apply it to therapy. It's destructive when we get that message across in the media that guys are just kind of clueless. And it actually impairs your ability to help men be actively involved in making a great marriage. So we really need to start treating men as if they're competent. Help them access their competencies and give them the tools in languages they can understand so that they can be active participants. Because the one thing I didn't say, and I think many of you may know this, that two-thirds of all divorces are precipitated by women. So women are walking away from marriage saying they're not happy. Guys are saying, what can I do? And I think we need to play a more active role in teaching them there is something you can do.
Right, and valuing the differences and valuing the strengths that men bring to, you know, the marriage and the relationship.
Yes, well put. Exactly. I think men bring tremendous strengths into relationships. And men passionately want their wives. I mean, they're crazy for them. So help men kind of get their needs met and help the women realize how how much these men love them, care about them, want to take care of them, want to be part of their lives. Because women aren't feeling it. And they're turning around and saying, this is not the right relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I think we need to teach men how to make women feel like the love is there. Mm-hmm. And I think we can teach guys to do it. And guys will start to feel competent and confident in the relationship, and boom, who wouldn't want a relationship like that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sexually, a couple is really misaligned. Either one of them has much higher sex drive and interest and energy than the other does. What's your... I know you say in your book, which I love, it's a great book, you say that, guys really pay attention, and help women be in the mood. But what are you really doing? You're really when the level of sexual interest is much different, even on either side.
One of the problems when there's such a divergent amount of sex drive is that the sex becomes the issue in the marriage. And I really try to avoid having sex, be the main issue. And, of course, I'm not always successful because sometimes people have this a rigid notion of sexuality and a rigid notion of what the admission ticket is, if you will, for the ability to have sex as a couple. But really what I try to stress for a couple is that having a regular sexual interaction is part of being a couple. That whether or not one person wants it, that person has got to be willing to give part of him or herself, because that's part of the sacrifices that people make for a relationship. And if somebody says, that may be true, Dr. Holtzman, but no way, Jose, I don't care what you tell me, I'm not going to do it, then it really becomes an issue of saying, all right, what am I willing to give up in this relationship? If I'm a man whose wife says, we have sex once a year and that's it, I have to ask myself, am I willing to stay in the relationship? Now, I will tell you, my view is that a lot of things change after marriage happens. And you can't predict if your wife this year says she's only going to have sex once a year, if 2 or 3 years from now she'll be interested in sex much more often, unless, of course, there's some medical condition. My view, I don't think that that's a ticket to leave marriage. I think people change. You need to adjust to that change. And you may get things that you may get needs that are not being met in that marriage. But marriage is so vast. It covers such a tremendous levels sociologically and interpersonally and emotionally that one partner may just need to adjust to not having sex.
Do you recommend that either the man or the woman, if it's physiological, get testosterone shots?
If a man is coming with a low sex drive, I'll often refer him, to get evaluated with his testosterone level. Usually the treatment these days is the androgen gel, which is a lot less invasive. It's easy to just rub it on your chest and you kind of squeeze it out of a little package. So I've got a few men that are being treated. It's somewhat controversial. I wouldn't recommend testosterone for someone with a normal level of testosterone. Also, women would benefit often from higher levels of testosterone. And there are very few doctors that are willing to treat women with testosterone. DMHO, I think that's the name of this substance you can buy over the counter that will increase testosterone levels.
Yeah, I know a woman who's taking it, and she said it's made an enormous difference.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of the point I was making. So, you call your wife all day from work, you bring her flowers, but she still doesn't have much of a sex drive. So, yeah, that is one of the points that I make in the book, is that a woman's testosterone level will often go down, and that it is worth getting a medical assessment in terms of trying to figure out why she doesn't have a sex drive. Don't just assume it's because, you're not charming enough. I don't believe that you should withhold sex in order to attain some other level of emotional connectedness. As a matter of fact, one of the things I write about in the book is I do think that that's unhealthy advice, because what happens with sexuality is when people pull back and stay disconnected sexually until one or another partner achieves some standard, actually the level of sexuality, the quality of sex actually declines over time. I think people need to stay in the game or they're trying to work things out and not postpone it, because then the sex becomes, it just becomes too much of a symbol. And it almost becomes the opposite of what you want it to be. You wanted it to, the man not to be so obsessed with it because he's just preoccupied with sex, but you've made him even more obsessed with it because now he has to, that's all he wants to work toward is sex.
I have a question regarding use of pornography. It seems to me that the pornography puts these sort of idealized images into the man's mind, which then he can use as fantasy during sex with his lover, and that creates the kind of objectification which the previous person was just talking about.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing that up, because I said that this is controversial.
That's, and by the way, that's a very good articulation of the classic argument against pornography.
Right. Let me try to address it, and I'm not saying I'm right on this, but I'm just trying to tell you what, you know, kind of men have told me and what works for some men. First of all, the fact of the matter is that pornography is out there. Not everyone that's using pornography is a porn addict. Otherwise, hotel rooms wouldn't be filled with, you know, businessmen that are using it. Porn sites wouldn't, you know, wouldn't be as tremendously popular as they are. There are lots of people out there that are not addicted to it. Now, you are absolutely right. Porn will idealize women because most of porn stars have idealized physical features that one could easily argue will destroy the ability to have a normal relationship with another person who's not a porn star. But I would argue that, first of all, you're not really going to get all that aroused, you know, if you're looking at people that are not physically attractive or that don't have physically arousing characteristics. So it would kind of be a bust if we tried to do porn with, you know, androgynous-looking people. So porn, if it's going to arouse, it's got to have a certain level of stimulation. But I think it's a myth that it will kind of force men to objectify their wives. Men tell me, as a matter of fact, right now in Red Book, there's an article about what men think during sex. I'm interviewed in that article, as are about a dozen men. And, you know, but men will tell me, when I'm with my wife, I'm thinking about sex with my wife. Well, I may be thinking about sex with my secretary, or I may be thinking about sex with Halle Berry, but more often than not, I'm thinking about sex with my wife. And for people that are concerned that being exposed to an idealistic human body will destroy relationships, please keep in mind that the equivalent is also true. I mean, women who watch chick flicks, and men watch them too, will look at these idealized relationships. You know, look how the guy's crying when he brings her a rose, and he's so sweet, and he talks about his feelings. And they'll translate that into what they expect in a relationship. And, you know, they're disappointed also. But I don't think men are disappointed when they're really with their wives. I think they're thrilled to be with their wives sexually. And if you're using porn all the time, that's a problem. You know, but if occasionally you grab the Victoria's Secret catalog and you bring it into the bathroom because your wife is in her menstrual cycle and, you know, nothing's going to be happening, I don't think it's the end of the world.
And we do have the ability to distinguish fantasy from reality, and we watch movies and TV shows all the time. We do realize that's not real.
Well, right, but there's that risk, isn't there? I mean, there's the risk that if you read enough romance novels, you're going to start to be disgusted with your husband who comes home and scratches his butt, you know, and instead of giving you a big hug and kiss, sits down in front of his computer. Now, I say, guys, you shouldn't be going and sitting down in front of your computer. You should give her a big hug and a kiss. But you're still never going to be equal to that romance novel hero.
Right, so everything in moderation. And you know what? We're at the end of our time. Dr. Halsman, thank you. Thank you very much. This has been a wonderful seminar. I've learned a lot. I hope our participants have learned a lot. This will be rebroadcast as a podcast, and the recording will be available at consciousrelationshippodcast.com if you want to listen to it again or, you know, share it with your friends and family. Scott, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, and don't share that part about porn with your friends and family. I don't feel like it that much. Pleasure, David. I really enjoyed being on the show, and thank you all for the comments and for your participation.
And next month, for our Conscious Relationship Seminar Series, we will have Pat Love, who will be presenting Creating Love Beyond Words. I'm looking forward to that. So have a good month, everybody.